welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. It's Thanksgiving Day, Thursday, November 24. I'm your reader, Kathleen. From the front page of the Gazette today, living on the streets. Numbers soar in Linn County as thousands seek help. Derecho and pandemic made a bad situation worse. This is the first installment of an occasional series submitted by Elijah Desius. As the temperature dropped to freezing in her tent, Mary Sand poured a large bottle of liquid hand sanitizer into a bowl on the floor. After filling the jagged, corrugated aluminum container with a few ounces of high alcohol solution, she sparked her cigarette lighter and moved it carefully toward the bowl, lighting a flame as blue as her blanket to dance on the surface. As Willis Dady Homeless Services prepared to open its overflow winter shelter for the first day of the season, November 15, this is how she stayed warm in a sight that goes unseen by most. The first snow of winter accumulating on Sand's tent roof signaled an imminent eviction as she huddled around the unconventional heat source. South of the New Bohemia District, her tent sits among a little-known village of homeless people. Hidden by hills and trees, Sand settled there when the community sprouted up in March. With the opening of the low-barrier shelter with no entry requirements for the winter months, Willis Dady advocates expect the encampment to be bulldozed by the city. Unhoused for the last 6 years, Sand has been kicked out of her settlements in various seasons more times than she can count. They say God doesn't give you more than you can handle, but let me tell you, there's a limit sometimes, said Sand, 56. There is a point of breaking. After living homeless in Colorado for several years, the Cedar Rapids native left her partner behind to return to Iowa. With 7 trespassing citations received over the course of a month, while living homeless in Colorado Springs, partner Johnny Ray Delgado followed her to Cedar Rapids about a month ago. In years past, the couple survived winters at the foot of Cheyenne Mountain by building an underground dugout. But as another winter approached faster than expected, the couple of Native American descent prayed for a housing miracle underneath the handmade dream catcher hanging in their tent. "We're not bad people. There's a lot of good people out here," said Sand. "People see the bad in us. They don't see the good." Delgado and Sand are part of a growing population in Linn County. Since July 2019, the summer street counts of homeless people living in encampments like theirs has more than tripled, from 33 to 107. The biannual point-in-time counts conducted by Willis Dady and Waypoint volunteers help calculate the size of the homeless population, including the number of people sleeping in places not meant for habitation. This year's summer tally of those living outdoors was the first time in recent memory the number surpassed 100. A decade ago, it was 11. Over the last 4 months, advocates at Willis Dady estimate the unsheltered population has increased another 50%. Support Services Director Aaron Terrones said his team has gone from handling 2 or 3 referrals per week to about 5 per day. "We're not recognizing the names, which is crazy to us," he said. "Frankly, it's kind of upsetting to see so many new names and faces." Staff at Willis Dady and Waypoint have seen a marked increase in the number of elderly clients and clients entering homelessness for the first time. Some fear the problem will get worse before it gets any better. Denise Jungle, a member of the Cedar Rapids homeless community known as MA, said she's seen about a dozen faces new to homelessness in the encampment this year. Some have become homeless since the pandemic and derecho. Others experienced a sudden change in their finances. "There are people out here for various reasons. There are people out here you won't find," she said. "There are people out here who you don't know their name. That's okay." But Ma declined to say exactly how many lived on the site, which Terrones called one of the biggest he'd seen in his 4 years at Willis Dady. "That's a number we don't like to discuss," Jungle told the Gazette. "The number out here either mobilizes the city or scares them." Wes Shirley, a Willis Dady library navigator and one of the most trusted staffers among the homeless community, said homeless encampment clearing is a constant push and pull that sows turmoil. "Each time a site is cleared, residents lose possessions. With no house or apartment to call home, possessions they held take on a scarcer value." Anything they find has value, he said. A lot of our folks growing up never had material possessions. Denise and her husband Tim Jungel, fittingly called Pa, have been homeless since they were illegally evicted from their last home, she said. As lifelong recreational campers, the couple may try to brave the weather this winter. I feel responsible for taking a shelter bed when I can survive out here, Denise said. After Willis Dady first opened the overflow winter shelter in 2013, it served 38 people in its first season. Last winter, it served 623. Housing is the solution to homelessness, said Alicia Faust, executive director at Willis Dady. The increase in homelessness and the decrease in affordable housing stock in Cedar Rapids, both exacerbated by the pandemic and derecho, have gone hand in hand. A population that was always close to the brink of homelessness became unable to rely on overwhelmed family support systems. The fiscal 2019 Waypoints Housing Services served 3,000 people who were at risk of losing housing. This fiscal year, they served 13,000, roughly two-thirds of whom are first-time clients, a departure from past trends. In the same time frame, the nonprofit's phone lines went from fielding about 75 calls per day to 1,000. About 4 out of 5 callers are diverted to self-resolution plans, such as asking their landlord for an extension or getting a paycheck advance from work to make next month's rent. But 3% of callers diverted to self-resolution plans still become homeless. The magnitude of people experiencing a housing crisis and reaching out for support is unprecedented, said Jane Peterman, director of housing services for Waypoint. The people in housing are struggling to maintain their housing. Once people enter the cycle of homelessness, it's substantially more difficult for them to escape. In Cedar Rapids, the housing market already was struggling to keep up with demand. This year, the overall vacancy rate dropped to 1.3%, according to Comprehensive Housing Needs Update, prepared in July for the city of Cedar Rapids. To promote competitive rents, 5% is considered a healthy vacancy rate. Year over year, rents have increased by 3 to 5% on average, the report said. After the August 2020 derecho, Faust noted that landlords who could not afford repairs on units would often sell them to other landlords, who would address the repairs and then increase rent. We knew we were in a housing crisis. I don't think we recognized that so many people were sleeping in the streets on a nightly basis, Peterman said. Housing options in the community are no longer meeting the needs of the most vulnerable population, who cycle through housing interventions that aren't meeting their needs. After distributing $700,000 in rental assistance this fiscal year, Willis Dady recently exhausted its rental assistance funds. It was a band-aid, Torrance said. Now that is being painfully ripped off, exposing a wound far from healing. Turning now to some Iowa Today stories, Prairie increases bus driver salary to $23 an hour, this story by Grace King. The College Community School District is increasing its starting salary for bus drivers to $23 an hour, a $2 per hour increase in an effort to recruit and retain more drivers. New hires also will receive a $500 sign-on bonus in just one recent initiative the district has launched in response to the national bus driver shortage. That's according to a news release Tuesday. All college community employees who recruit a new driver, van driver, or bus aide to join the transportation department also receive a new recruitment bonus. Our goal is to ensure that every student who needs transportation has a ride to school each and every day, Superintendent Doug Wheeler said. College Community currently has 50 drivers working for the district, transporting nearly 4,000 students a day. The district is in need of an additional 10 drivers. Over the last 4 years, College Community has rolled out 3 bus driver salary increases, created an employee recruitment bonus program, increased bus driver benefit eligibility, and added an additional paid holiday. The Class B CDL license required to drive a school bus is not required to apply. New hires are compensated for completing on-the-job training and are reimbursed for half the cost of the license, according to a news release. Bus drivers have a flexible schedule with part-time hours, paid holidays, summers off, and eligibility for benefits. As we emerge from the pandemic, the challenges of staffing are impacting all sectors of our community and economy, Wheeler said. Schools are also experiencing this unprecedented staffing challenge, which has been well documented in local and national media. While college community and Iowa in general tend to be experiencing fewer challenges than in most other states, we have not been immune to the impacts of staffing shortages, especially in the area of transportation, he said. School districts across the nation are facing a shortage of school bus drivers. During the summer of 2020, the Cedar Rapids Community School District lost a fifth of its school bus drivers because of COVID-19. In August, the Cedar Rapids District said it was facing challenging bus driver shortages, according to a news release. The district implemented several short and long-term strategies to close the staffing shortage gap, including combining routes and having mechanics trained in driving buses. The Lenmar School District hosted a career fair in October, also looking for school bus drivers, among other staff support. Its starting salary is $21.50 an hour plus paid training and up to $500 sign-on bonus. Also in Iowa Today News, Alliance Cedar Rapids Solar Garden is 75% reserved. 75% of the solar blocks by Alliant Energy's incoming Cedar Rapids Community Solar Garden have been claimed. This story is by Brittany Miller. The solar garden, scheduled to be completed next summer, will consist of 18,000 solar blocks. At maximum output, the 4.5-megawatt project could power about 3,600 homes. Upon the initial announcement in July, 60% of the garden's blocks, the maximum amount a single subscriber can claim, was already committed to Transamerica and Aegon Asset Management. That's a diversified insurance and investment group. An additional 6% were allotted to the Cedar Valley Habitat for Humanity. Since then, nonprofit organizations, small business owners, and residents have purchased subscriptions, including the Greater Cedar Rapids Community Foundation, Alliant said in a news release. Gary's Foods, a locally owned family grocery store in Mount Vernon, purchased 126 solar blocks, said store manager Peter Dietrich. The resulting solar energy will make up 10% of the store's energy use. I've always wanted to do similar projects, Dietrich said. Solar and other alternative ways of doing electricity would help everybody in the whole world, and our bottom line too. Each 250-watt solar block will generate an average of 541 kilowatt-hours annually and is priced at $395. Alliant customers who buy a block will receive monthly energy credits on their electric bills, beginning at 5.59 cents per kilowatt-hour. Those credits begin once the garden is operating and will continue for the 20-year life of the project. The solar garden will be built on Alliant property north of the 1100 block of 33rd Avenue Southwest in Cedar Rapids. Construction is expected to be completed by late summer 2023. Another 4,500 solar blocks are available for subscription. Interested customers can reserve a block online at alliantenergy.com/community solar. Alliant offers an online calculator for potential subscribers to determine how many solar blocks they would need to supplement or fully cover their energy needs. This story by Matthew Rezab is titled Clear Lake FFA Members Learn About Harvest. More than 20 bright-eyed Clear Lake High School FFA students climbed upon Charlie Norris's combine for a group photo earlier this month. All Norris had to say was, "Be careful," about five times. No students lost leg or limb, and the photo was taken. The young student learners were at the Clear Lake FFA's 8-acre corn plot just east of the Mason City Motor Speedway at the fairgrounds to learn about production agriculture. Norris, along with his wife Louise, donated the planting and harvesting equipment for the second-year program. Seeds were donated by Muff Ag Services, and the land was made available by the North Iowa Fairgrounds for no fee. The grain will be transported to Golden Grain Energy in Mason City, and Clear Lake FFA will receive the profits. We use it as one of our two main fundraisers for the year, FFA advisor Elisa Russ Pogemiller said. The proceeds will be used for trips to national and state conventions, FFA Blue Jackets, scholarships, competitions, and other activities. Charlie Norris said he and Louise got involved in FFA because of their daughter, Jennifer Cash, who passed away in 2019. Cash was an instrumental part of founding the Clear Lake FFA program. Our involvement is kind of legacy for her. She was very passionate about it, and we are too, he said. Our youth need to learn more about agriculture, and some of these youths will be involved in agriculture. The Norrises still farm on land between Mason City and Clear Lake, but most of the students live in town. We have a lot of students that don't come from a farming background and don't have the opportunity to experience what production ag looks like, Russ Pogemiller said. So just getting them out here for a day, I hope that they will learn more about where their food comes from and what it takes to actually grow the crops and tend to the land. The students had the opportunity to ride in the combine during the harvest. Charlie Norris pointed out the technology used today is much more advanced than when he started farming decades ago. Today's combines can basically drive themselves, sense yield, measure moisture, and map the harvest in real time. There's a lot of nice technology in the equipment these days, a lot nicer than the equipment when I started, he said. His equipment can harvest around 15 acres per hour. Junior Alexis Haug was there at last year's harvest, and she said there's only so much you can learn inside a classroom. It's important, Haug said, for Iowa youth to understand what makes the economy and culture click. I think it's been a really great experience for students. I didn't grow up on a farm, so for people like me, it's really great to be out here and be learning about this part of agriculture, she said. If you look at Iowa's economy and what Iowa's based on, it's agriculture, it's really great. Students were able to speak with and ask questions of experts in multiple fields of agriculture during a roundtable discussion after lunch. They were able to learn about everything from ag banking from Clear Lake Band and I think that should be Bank and Trust Senior Vice President Pat Gedkin, to Ag Communications from Amy Fleming, Sukup Manufacturing's Community and Internal Communications Coordinator. Russ Pogemiller said the roundtable was an opportunity for students to learn that there are jobs related directly to agriculture that may not require one to ever set foot in a field. Haug said she is considering using a marketing degree in the ag sector. She said she hopes to already have her associate degree in marketing by the time she graduates high school. It's really opened doors with career paths, she said. I think that's definitely something I'd be interested in looking more into. Turning now to the Insight page, Give Back at Thanksgiving is the Gazette's editorial. There is much to be thankful for this Thanksgiving. But while we count our blessings, we also should take a moment to think about the fact that the need for help and volunteers to provide it remains great. Look no further than this past Monday, when cars lined up for hours to receive Thanksgiving meal boxes from Together We Achieve at Hawkeye Downs Speedway and Expo Center in Cedar Rapids. The nonprofit distributed unprepared meal boxes to 500 households. Registration for a second round of mealbox giveaways on Friday is full, as is a wait list. According to its website, Together We Achieve has served more than 10,800 individuals with 704,768 pounds of distributed food and more than 5,700 hot meals. Another Eastern Iowa-based nonprofit, the Iowa Giving Crew, distributed 1,200 Thanksgiving meal boxes on Sunday as part of its annual Operation Give Birds. People are rising to the challenge, but both of these organizations are looking for volunteers. There are many organizations in our communities that need volunteer help and resources. We're welcoming refugees and immigrants who need assistance, support, and stability. Kids need warm coats and boots to wear this winter. Multiple organizations will be offering opportunities to brighten the holidays for local families. Homelessness remains a pressing local issue. Housing, food, and clothing are needed. Meals need to be delivered to people who must stay home. Sidewalks need to be cleared when snow falls. People need rides to doctor's appointments and other necessary trips. The list is endless. So the needs are there and growing. What's missing may be you and others. Your time and resources can make a big difference in how quickly and effectively these needs can be met. This is not just a Thanksgiving or holiday concern. Volunteers are needed year-round, but this is the season when the contrast between those of us blessed with abundance and those in need is perhaps the sharpest and most poignant. Community needs are literally a ringing bell greeting us when we enter retail stores. Thanksgiving is the perfect time to resolve to give back. 24-Hour Doorman today is titled, Call the Butterball Politics Hotline. Hello, you've reached the Butterball Politics Hotline. How can I help? I forgot to thaw my turkey. Is there any way I can still roast it? Sorry, for a question like that, you need to call the regular Butterball Hotline. This is a new service to help people deal with political disputes at the family gatherings. Do you have a politics problem? Not yet, but I'll keep the number handy. Butterball Politics Hotline, how can I help? My uncle wore a MAGA hat to dinner and won't take it off. He called us all snowflakes. Got it. Tell him P.J. O'Rourke, who was a Republican, once wrote, a hat should be taken off when you greet a lady or left off for the rest of your life. Nothing looks more stupid than a hat. Otherwise, carefully snatch it when he naps. I'll try it. Thanks. Butterball Hotline, how can I help? My brother and nephew are arguing about the election. My nephew yelled, you want a red wave? Here's a red wave, and threw a bowl of cranberries. What should I do? Quickly changed the subject to the wave at University of Iowa Hawkeye football games toward the Children's Hospital. It brings us all together. Oh, good call. Thanks. Butterball Politics Hotline, how can I help? I'm grill smoking my turkey and my daughter home from college says I'm destroying the planet and her future. What should I do? Grilling makes up only 0.0003% of the U.S. annual carbon footprint. Tell your daughter to relax and enjoy the bird. What a relief. Thanks. Butterball Politics Hotline, how can I help? My son's girlfriend and my husband are arguing about Hunter Biden's laptop. What can I do to make them stop? Dump each of their plates into their laps. Now they have a different laptop to worry about. Oh, that ought to do it. Thanks. Butterball Politics Hotline, how can I help? I'm having Thanksgiving dinner at Mar-a-Lago. When I went to the powder room, I found a box of nuclear secrets. What should I do? Please hold and I'll connect you to the Department of Justice. Thank you so much. Butterball Politics Hotline, how can I help? My cousin is accusing me of leaving the little marshmallows off the sweet potatoes because I'm woke. What's up with that? Tell your cousin he's the little marshmallow. White, sweet, but not too bright. Perfect, thanks. Butterball Politics, how can I help? My grandparents keep blaming Chicago people for all the crime and urban voters for stealing the election and illegal aliens for all the drugs. What can I do? Politely inform them there's no pie for racists. Great idea. Thanks. Butterball Politics Hotline, how can I help? Please help. My parents and in-laws are fighting about inflation. My sister and aunt are at each other's throats over abortion. My uncle and daughter are screaming about school vouchers. My cousin is pounding the table, yelling, the libs are ruining America, while grandma gives him the double bird. I've lost control. What can I do? Grab a bottle, find a quiet place in the house, and give thanks. It's only once a year. That's today's 24-Hour Doorman. And one community letter states, focus on what matters this Thanksgiving. This Thanksgiving seems calm. COVID appears to be somewhat contained, though not for certain. News stations and political ads are minimal. Over the holidays, we will undoubtedly hear more and more. This year must be focused on what matters within all of us. Families are emerging to come together again. Family, friends, pets, loving and seeing everyone. Family seeing each other for the first time in a couple of years. All of this put together spells reuniting and being close with loved ones and friends, catching up and sharing stories, how short life can be. People around the world are struggling, torn by war and tyranny, lawlessness and corruption, poverty, famine, and mental health issues in school and workplaces. We must look deeper into ourselves and see how thankful we should be. Like for the brave men and women overseas keeping us safe and secure, though not back home with their families and friends. It hasn't been easy for all of us for the last few years. While lives have been lost and families and friends separated, we should be praying and thankful that we can eat in peace with all the people we cherish, love, respect, and those who make us complete. Thanksgiving is one of three holidays where people feast together and love one another. Thanksgiving makes Americans and their loved ones complete. And that's signed today by Tyler Fahey of Cedar Rapids. You're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette today on IRIS. Today is Thursday, November 24. Next, we turn to obituaries, starting with the short notices. First from Center Point, Bert Roseberry, age 98, died Monday, November 21st. Iowa Cremation is in charge of arrangements. Fort Atkinson, Ida Krivichak, age 87, died Tuesday, November 22nd. Helms Funeral Home, Decorah. And two notices from Waukon. First, Irene Allison, age 101, died Thursday, November 10. Martin Grau Funeral Home is in charge. And Etta S. Halverson, age 85, died Monday, November 21st. Martin Grau Funeral Home is assisting. Turning now to the regular notices, first from Cedar Rapids, Sally Jean Belts, age 72, passed peacefully Friday, November 11, after several years battling numerous health ailments. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. December 3 at St. Stephen's, 610 31st Street Southeast in Cedar Rapids. There will be a luncheon held immediately following the service at St. Stephen's, and all are welcome to come celebrate the life of this amazing woman and incredible mother. Memorials can be made to the family and sent to 940 South 5th Street in Marion, 52302. In Marion, Lane M. Laffler, age 60, passed peacefully Monday, November 20, at his home in Marion. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, November 26th at the Phillips Funeral Home in Keystone with Chris Laffler officiating. Interment will be held at the Keystone Cemetery. Friends may call from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, November 25th at the funeral home. Online condolences can be left at phillipsfuneralhomes.com. In Marion, Linda K. Huber, 80, passed away Monday, November 21st at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy in Hiawatha. A Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 10 a.m. on Monday, November 28th at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Marion, where a visitation will begin 1 hour prior to the Mass. Reverend Dennis Jewell will officiate. Burial will follow at Mount Calvary Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Marion is assisting the family. Also in Marion, Shirley Louise Rinderknecht, 87, died Monday, November 21st. A visitation will be held on Sunday, November 27th from 2 to 4 p.m. at Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. Interment at Higginsville City Cemetery in Higginsville, Missouri. Please leave a message for the family on our webpage, cedarmemorial.com. From Hudson, Florida, Leslie Tackleson passed away Wednesday, October 19, after a long-term illness, leaving behind family and friends who loved her very much. A celebration of life service is 3 p.m. on Tuesday, November 29th at the TN Funeral Home. Friends may visit with the family from 1 to 2:45 p.m. before the service. Memorials may be given in her honor to Last Hope Animal Rescue or your favorite charity. Online condolences can be left at tnfuneralhome.com. In Cedar Rapids, Glenda Sue Stoll passed away Tuesday, November 22nd at Unity Point St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids, surrounded by family. Memorial service is at 1 p.m. Sunday, November 27th at the Legacy Center at Murdoch Linwood in Cedar Rapids with visitation 1 hour prior. Dr. Reuben George Keegan, excuse me, August 18, 1938 to October 19, 2022. An extensive obituary includes his many achievements and life happenings. Donations may be made in the name of Dr. Reuben George Keegan for the James Massey Keegan Scholarship at the University of Galway School of Medicine, Galway, Ireland. Information for that scholarship can be found online. From Olin, Alan Ray Bixler, age 85, died Tuesday, November 22nd in his home with his family around him. A celebration of life service will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, November 30th at Olin Community United Methodist Church. Reverend Jennifer Zoller will officiate. Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Leave a message for the family on the website cedarmemorial.com. In Monticello, Harvey C. Johnson, age 77, passed away Monday, November 21st. A celebration of life and luncheon will be held at Monticello Eagles Club, Saturday, November 26th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. In West Branch, Melvin Eugene Korshkin, age 81, passed away November 20th at home from complications of Parkinson's disease and related dementia. Mel was surrounded by family with his favorite music, The Stars and Stripes Forever, playing in the background. Funeral services for Melvin will be at 2 p.m. Monday, November 28th at Henderson Barker Funeral Home in West Branch. Visitation will be held prior to the service from noon to 2 p.m. at the funeral home. Burial will be in the West Branch Cemetery with full military honors. Online condolences may be made to the family at hendersonbarkerfuneralhome.com. Memorial donations may be made to the West Branch All Sports Booster Club or the West Branch Lions Club. Turning now to the sports page, our high school story today, Girls Wrestling Notebook, From Small Start to Big Goals, KJ Pilcher. Jordan Wheeler was one of the original five. She also is the last of the group of girls who showed interest in joining Marion's wrestling program 3 years ago. "It's pretty neat she was willing to take a chance on our program," Marion coach Jason Hogg said. "Now it's sanctioned for her senior year." Wheeler has been part of the development of girls wrestling at Marion, growing from a handful of competitors her freshman season to 11 on the school's official team her senior year. The experience has changed during Wheeler's participation. "It's different this year," Wheeler said. "First year it was all fun and games. We're wrestling for points now. It makes me a little nervous. I was excited to hear we were sanctioning it." Marion had 10 wrestlers to start, and then a manager inquired about wrestling the day of the first competition. Haig said Wheeler has done a little recruiting and has persevered the sport's demands. "She just goes about her business," Haig said. "She's always been in for the long haul." Wheeler has improved each season and has won at least one match in each of the Iowa Wrestling Coaches and Officials Association Girls State Tournaments. She recorded 18 victories last season and posted her 30th career win Saturday at the Independence Girls Invitational. Wheeler went 2-1 in the season opening scramble, notching 2 first period pins. "My performance has been decent," Wheeler said. "My mindset isn't where I want it, but I'm working on it. I have to focus more on the match and not the other girl." Wrestling always has been an attraction to Wheeler, stemming from her family's appreciation for the sport. A friend at school convinced her to go to that first meeting with her. "Practices are tough, but it was her first match that hooked her. It was a different atmosphere than practice," she said. The girls' season has state qualifying tournaments for the first time. "I'm really excited for regionals," Wheeler said. "I want to be one of the first girls at Marion to qualify for state. I think it would be cool to be up, too." Decorah's Naomi Simon and Skyla Jevny captured individual titles Saturday at the Decorah tournament. Simon, a two-time IWCOA girls' state tournament champion, is ranked 6th nationally. She pinned her way through the 170-pound bracket, stopping Wakan's Chloe Hammersbach in 1:14 for the championship. Jevny also pinned her way to the 235 crown needing 109 to defeat Vanessa Schnulli in the finals. Wakan, Postville, and MFL Marmac each had individual champions. Mid Prairie finished in first place at the BGM tournament on Saturday in Brooklyn. BGM scored 118 points, two more than the Des Moines Public Schools combined program. The Golden Hawks received varsity titles from Gabby Robertson at 100 pounds and 170-pounder Mia Garvey. Turning now to the living page, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. The Bruce Moore Mansion reopens just in time for holiday festivities. This story by Elijah Desius. After several months of closure, the Bruce Moore Mansion is reopening, including the return of several favorite activities for the first time since the pandemic began. Seamlessly melding the heritage of past traditions with modern decor that reflects the estate's opulence, Bruce Moore's holiday season will bring back warmth into the halls that have been closed since May when the mansion underwent installation of a geothermic HVAC system that forced staff to temporarily disassemble most rooms. With the return of evening tours, children's programming, and the modern salon program, the spirit of hospitality from Cedar Rapids' wealthiest founding families over the 19th and 20th century will once again be embodied on the historic grounds. This is a celebration to return to normalcy in several ways. This is our big welcome back. We're excited to see you, said Megan Clevenger, Bruce Moore Program and Outreach Manager. We've been preparing for that by bringing back these popular programs we've had in the past. You see the mansions in ways you don't see in the summer. It's quite beautiful. This year, children and adults alike will once again be able to not just visit the mansion, but celebrate the holidays in it through activities back from hiatus. For families, Santa, Snacks, and Stories will invite a visit from Kris Kringle, November 28th and 29th. There, children can give their wish list to Santa, take photos with him, listen to stories, and do crafts and activities throughout the mansion. Tickets must be purchased online in advance at brucemoore.org. Children 12 and under are admitted for $10, adults for $5. Entries are scheduled in 30-minute increments from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Holiday Nights, a Bruce Moore Christmas experience, offers self-guided tours Thursday, Sunday, and selected Wednesday evenings from December 1st to 22nd. Adult tickets are $15 each and are available in advance online only with timed entries from 5 to 7 p.m. During self-guided tours, staff will be available throughout the mansion to answer questions and tell stories of those who lived there. Starting January 13, Bruce Moore will bring back its modern salon program, an evening variety show reminiscent of the turn of the 20th century Parisian life for the first time since 2020. The way the Bruce Moore Mansion decorates for the holidays isn't completely reflective of what it would have looked like 100 years ago during the Douglas family era. A tree in every room wasn't the historical norm for holiday decorating at the time when artificial trees were not available and lit candles on live trees were more prevalent than light bulbs. In addition to seeing artifacts and hearing the music of the Douglas family's holiday celebrations, guests can learn about the food and meal culture of the time. Regular visitors may see a few minor tweaks to the home since it was reassembled, but for the most part, the tradition of the home remains intact nearly everywhere the eye lands. It's been a complicated year for me in particular as curator of museum collections, P.O. Austin said. It's a really good feeling to get everything back to normal. Here's an article on Christmas tree farms to choose from in 2022, this article by Elijah Desius. Searching for a Christmas tree? The Bruce Moore Mansion may have 13, but if you're shopping for a slightly smaller number to fit your living room, these local farms should fit the bill. In Benton County, Cassina Family Farm, 2510 55th Street in Vinton, pre-cut trees are available for purchase from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. November 26th and 27th. In Blackhawk County, Kris Kringle's Tree Farm at 5220 West Bennington Road in Cedar Falls, Trees are for sale November 25th to December 10th or until they're sold out. They're open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. opening day and weekends 1 to 5 on weekdays. In Bremer County, Wapsie Pines Christmas Tree Farm, located at 2778 Whitetail Avenue in Fairbank, that's open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Opening day and weekends, 1 to 5 on weekdays. In Johnson County, Handley's Holiday Hillside, located at 1731 White Oak Avenue Northeast in Solon, tree sales start November 25th and they are open Saturdays and Sundays from 10 to 4 or until they're sold out. In Jones County, A&A Christmas Tree Farm at 14201 170th Avenue in Monticello, tree sales are November 25th to the 27th and December 3 to 4 from 8:30 to 4:30. In Linn County, Cedars Edge Evergreens, 2188 Ivanhoe Road at Ely, open Fridays and Saturdays from 9 to 6 or until they're sold out. They start tree sales November 25th. Also, the Hoffman Tree Farm at 9409 C Avenue in Marion, sales start Thanksgiving weekend. They're open from 3:30 to 7, Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Friday through Sunday. Choose and cut trees, limited availability. The Wiki Uphill Tree Farm at Wiki Uphill Road in Toddville will have sales open November 25th to the 30th and December 3. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday through Sunday, 1 to 5 on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. In Loayza County, Honey Creek Timbers at 1501 L Avenue in Morning Sun, their sales open November 19. Hours are 9 to 5 every day except Thanksgiving. They have choose and cut trees in a limited supply. And in Winnesheek County, Bappy's Holiday Pines Tree Farm at 1860 Whitetail Road in Decorah. Holiday Pines Tree Farm sales open November 25th. They're open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays while supplies last. In the living section, this article by Ebony Williams is titled, Add Fun to Your Holiday Party with These Game Ideas. You can't go wrong with classics like Trivial Pursuit or Scrabble, of course, but if you're looking for something a little different, consider these six delightful holiday games. Apart from the drinking game, they're perfect for nearly all ages, and they'll all leave your guests remembering your fabulous party for years to come. Emoji Movie Game. This game is perfect for parties with kids. Just pass out the game cards and get to work guessing the holiday movie titles represented by the emoji. Play for points and let the winner decide which of the holiday favorites you watch first. PlayPartyPlan.com has the details and downloadable, printable game sheets. Holiday Bingo Boards must make the most of just about any holiday activity. Whether you're watching a movie or eating dinner, these custom holiday bingo cards turn everything into a game. Getting a perfect holiday bingo board is easy. Just log in to Pinterest and print away. Candy Canes. Ever play Spoons? Well, the raucous game is just as fun, perhaps not as noisy, when playing with candy canes. All you need is some candy canes, a deck of cards, and 4 to 8 players ready for a good time. And Masters of Mystery recently released their Christmas mashup murder mystery game. It's the ultimate holiday-themed whodunit. The game is available in several languages for 4 to 20 players. You can purchase the game at mastersofmystery.com. And here's a story, Oven Fires and Cats in Turkeys. This by Emily Heal from the Washington Post. We asked readers to share their horrific and hilarious stories of Thanksgiving meals gone awry, and the results were as delicious as a golden brown turkey, unlike the charred birds that featured in some readers' tales. And I'll abbreviate these stories in the interest of time. From exploding oven doors to critter encounters, raccoons, squirrels, and one particularly ravenous Labrador puppy, your misadventures made for delightful cautionary tales and mysteries. How did that dish towel wind up inside the main course? Some themes emerged. For one, it's almost always the blasted turkey that trips people up. Maybe because they're often large, both unwieldy and tricky to cook all the way through, and not something people prepare on a regular basis. Turkeys are a once-a-year encounter that proves particularly perilous. Another commonality was even more universal. So many of you ended your tales with some variation of this. That was 43 years ago, we love that memory, and we still laugh about it. Or, to this day, when either of us sees a turkey in the oven, we say, remember when? These are stories told and retold over the decades, sometimes, I assume, picking up dramatic details along the way, at least if your family is anything like mine, forming shared lore that creates bonds and a collective identity. Which is, more than any perfectly prepared meal, something we should all be thankful for. Here are some of our favorites, which have been edited for clarity and brevity. And I also will edit. Busted open door. Dinner was all ready, and the spread, Cornish hens and all the sides, was warming in the oven, said Lauren Krause, a 30-year-old writer from Harrisonburg, Virginia. She and her husband were having a quiet holiday, just the two of them, when, for some reason, and we don't know why, my husband flipped on the self-cleaning function. The oven door locked with their Thanksgiving feast inside. Frantic Googling ensued. They unplugged the oven, but still couldn't get the stubborn beast's door to open. Though she was tired from all the baking and cooking, Krause soon switched functions herself and whipped up an alternative menu of steak with mushrooms and broccoli. Coda, the oven door never did open. Even repairmen tried and failed. Eventually, they moved the stove, which had started to stink, onto the porch while they waited for a replacement. I like to think that somewhere in some landfill, our Thanksgiving dinner is still encased in that darn oven. A beautiful, fossilized feast, she said. An exploding oven. I was in the living room watching football, and we heard a loud bang in the kitchen. We all ran in, expecting the worst, only to see our father standing there with a confused and slightly terrified look on his face, wrote Andrew Bilhart of Chicago. Apparently, he decided he wanted to flavor the turkey drippings with bourbon. A little while later, the bourbon ignited and blew the oven door off the hinges and sent it flying. He reattached the door, and the turkey turned out fine, but we have never let him live it down. Here's one called Forgetful Cook. My fiancé's extended family said their turkey smoker would make the best ever turkey. The bird was a 24-pound fresh turkey, and they designated midnight as the start time, recalled Paul Moe of Jacksonville, Florida. Around 9 a.m. on Thanksgiving Day, one of the brothers checked the progress. Someone forgot to plug in the smoker. Since the overnight temperature was in the low 60s, we decided it wasn't a good idea to cook this bird. All they could find was a frozen turkey. It was almost 11 p.m. when everything was finally ready. Worst Thanksgiving ever. Here's one titled, A Dog Thief. About 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, a neighbor knocked on Kevin Thomas's door with a question. Was he missing his turkey? Thomas, 70, now retired and living in Wilmington, North Carolina, replied that no, theirs was safely defrosting in the garage atop the chest freezer. He asked, are you sure? They checked, and indeed the bird was missing and the garage door had been accidentally left ajar. His Labrador Retriever puppy had been chewing on a turkey that wasn't theirs. The neighbor insisted on replacing it, but all he could find was a massive 25-pounder. Dinner was late and the family had weeks of leftovers, he said, but he and his now grown kids still laugh at the memory. There'll be three dogs at dinner this year, Thomas said. We'll keep an eye on them. An accidental trip. My late husband and I had our parents join us, wrote Diane Ashworth of Clayton, North Carolina. It was the first time that everyone had met each other. Everything was made from scratch and I had worked 2 days preparing it. The guest of honor was a 23-pound turkey, which looked like it could have been the picture in a cookbook. Just as I was carrying it from the kitchen to the dining room, my toy poodle ran in front of me. Down I went. My platter was broken. my beautiful turkey splattered on the carpet, and me with my less than gracious entrance in the horizontal position on the floor. End of story, we ate everything else, and a couple years later it became funny to everyone, not me. The carpet still has a faint stain on the scene of the crime, a memento of the best Thanksgiving that never was. An odd stuffing choice. Years ago, I spent Thanksgiving with my college roommate and her family, wrote Linda Webster of Washington, Virginia. Her dad did the cooking, and as he was preparing the big meal, asked us if we had seen his dishcloth. None of us could find it. Odd. A few hours later, we heard a huge thud coming from the kitchen. We raced to find Dad on the floor, doubled up, laughing. Upon removing the turkey from the oven and taking the dressing out of the bird's cavity, he found the missing dishcloth. Marauding raccoons. It didn't take long for Kevin Rockland, a now retired engineer from Seattle, to settle on his game plan. As he had done in previous years, he had placed his turkey in a large stock pot to brine, and since the temperature was cold enough and his refrigerator not big enough, he secured the lid with twine and left it outside overnight to work its magic. One year, though, some marauding raccoons gnawed through the rope and helped themselves to the turkey that had bobbed to the surface. It was surgically precise, Rochlin said, confined to one drumstick. He quickly thought about his options and decided on the easiest path. I lopped off the leg. No one was the wiser, he said. He kept the secret by carving the turkey first rather than presenting it whole, and his younger daughter only discovered it later in the evening when she overheard him discussing it with his wife. She was horrified. Dad, you could have killed us. The tale has been told for years after as the two of us try to get family members to take our side on how things should have been done. An epilogue? Both his daughters, he said, are now vegetarians. And here's a last one titled The Other Turkey. At Thanksgiving dinner sometime in the 1940s, wrote Lucy Davidson of Dawsonville, Georgia, the turkey slipped off the platter and skidded across the floor. My grandfather, as host, was unperturbed and instructed, "Bring in the other turkey." The wayward bird was retrieved and back inside the kitchen, discreetly replated. For the remainder of his life, my father greeted any culinary or server mishap with, "Bring in the other turkey." Also in the living section, the most anticipated movies this holiday 2022 season. The holiday season tends to bring a rush of serious movies, prestige projects with Academy Awards buzz all over them, sprinkled with a handful of just-for-fun romps. This year is no exception, and those venturing out to the multiplex this season will find everything from a Steven Spielberg origin story to a cannibal love tale at a Whitney Houston biopic, and a long-awaited sequel to the highest-grossing movie of all time. Here are the titles of a few. The Fablemans, Steven Spielberg looking back at his own youth. Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery. Strange World, Disney pretty much always has a family movie on tap for this weekend, and this year's version is an adventure featuring a family of explorers. Bones and All, the latest sensual odyssey from Italian filmmaker who also produced Call Me By Your Name, Suspiria, and I Am Love. Women Talking, actor-director Sarah Polley's latest feature, and it's been a while, her last was Stories We Tell. Emancipation, can Will Smith's career recover from the slap at the Oscars early this year? He's the star of this historical drama. Also, Empire of Light, Sam Mendes takes a break from blockbusters to tell a quiet, small-scale love story. The Inspection, filmmaker-photographer Elegance Bratton, a former Marine, makes his feature debut with this tale of a young Marine who faces homophobia at boot camp and at home. Other titles coming soon are Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, I Want to Dance with Somebody, The Whale, Avatar, The Way of Water, Babylon, and The Sun. Finishing up today with the weather, chance of isolated showers and drizzle today. Cedar Rapids, a high of 49 and a low of 28. Iowa City, 53 and 29. Looking for partly cloudy skies through the rest of the weekend with highs in the mid to low 40s. The normal high for today is 42. the low 24. A record high of 63 degrees was set in 1931, a record low of 2 below zero in 1950. Sunset tonight is 4:39 p.m., sunrise tomorrow at 7:08 a.m. That gives us 9 hours and 32 minutes of daylight, and we're in the new moon phase. That does it for the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Thursday, November 24. Have a safe and blessed Thanksgiving Day. Thank you for listening.